Welcome to AI Snacks with Romy and Robbie, an AI literacy podcast for teens and their parents, grandparents, educators, business founders, executives, and anyone interested in AI and robotics. I'm your host, Anastasia, founder and CEO of AI Edutainment. This podcast, my website, my LinkedIn, and Instagram are good sources to learn about anything AI. And my humble goal is to translate AI technologies from difficult to easy to understand. Today, I have quite a treat for you. I am joined in my studio by Victor Varnado. He is an Emmy-nominated comedian, filmmaker, writer, and technology entrepreneur who has built a unique career at the intersection of creativity and artificial intelligence. He did films like End of Days with Arnold Schwarzenegger, The Adventures of Pluto Nash with Eddie Murphy, and Julian Donkey Boy with Werner Herzog. He's a cartoonist for the iconic New Yorker, and he is the founder and CEO of Supreme Robot Pictures. Victor created a popular AI tool called Magic Bookifier that turns content into structured books. And he has recently published a book, AI for All of Us, Using AI in Everyday Life and Business. So today you are going to learn how Victor got started in AI and what his AI tool, Magic Bookifier, is all about. You will experience strange stories of real people encountering an impenetrable wall of AI scanning during a job application process, or a story about Victor's wife who solved a real crime with the help of AI. We will discuss how AI can help with social anxiety, and I will make a quite unsuccessful attempt to coin a term for a situation in which you require an AI avatar, or kind of an AI avatar, to blend into you to pass a job application. At the end, we live in a world where we partly write for AIs, and AIs are hired to let us pass the first threshold before we get in front of a real human being. And in this context, let me say why I loved my conversation with Victor. Yes, he uses AI in pretty much everything he does, but he's all about human agency. At the end, why do we humans create? Why do we write? Why do we make movies? Why do we sing? We engage in arts and creativity because we have this innate urge to communicate and express ourselves. There is a wish to be heard. And in this context, this episode is very aligned with my Beyond Human series, in which I discuss how AI can enhance human excellence and not deprive us of it. So let's open the studio to Victor. Victor, welcome to my studio. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm happy to be here. You are very smiley.
Yes. Well, it's December. It's a holiday season. So it's quite a season for smiles. I would like to ask you, what were your first experiences with artificial intelligence? And I assume we are discussing Gen AI, generative AI here, not traditional machine learning tools.
Right. My first experience with artificial intelligence, I think, was just like everybody else in text completion on my phone. But the first time I started using like the modern version of artificial intelligence that we're all talking about, I think it was really just after the pandemic when it was. So I was very aware of AI, but then when GPT-3 came out and it started to really hit everybody, I think I had already been using like GPT-2 and 2.5 for several months and just like was like figuring it out. And then when GPT-3 came out, I was like, oh, this could do actual, it could be useful. And then yeah. I started to figure out ways that it could develop into something, into products. And I saw what people were doing with AI immediately. And I thought that perhaps people were kind of taking the wrong tact about how they were creating products. And then I tried to create a product that was useful to me.
It's quite interesting because the majority of people started using GPT-3 in their chatbot version as ChatGPT. And GPT-3 first appeared in June 2020. So there was quite a time gap between, let's say, the model and then democratizing of this model in terms of a chatbot. And you are one of the first in the creative industry who really kind of, you know, took it before it became very popular with the general public. And what did you think first when you started using it?
I was amazed because when I was a kid in the 80s, and I was like really into computers and basic programming, et cetera, you imagined that a computer could talk back to you, you know, and that was like the dream. Like in the 80s, like they made the movie Tron, you know, where people went in the computer and all the programs were like talking just like people. And that's how you could communicate and get things done. And then now that it was like a real thing, I was like, okay, now how far can we actually push it? And so that became like, I think it's just like, I got sucked in so fast because like it was exactly what I had imagined from since being a kid.
That's so interesting. Yes, you know, when I teach AI to MBAs, so people who have never studied statistics or computer science, they're always surprised that AI actually is not really talking to you. It's even not aware that you are a human being and it uses language because those Gen AIs are processing tokens. And I would love kind of, you know, to elaborate with you what is the role of humans? What is the role of AIs? And you are a creator, so you worked across several creative industries.
You're
a comedian. You're a comedian. You work for New Yorker. You're a cartoonist. You worked at Hollywood sets in quite famous movies. And I just wonder, in your perspective, what drives humans to create, to write, to perform, to build stories?
What drives humans to create? Well, if that's the question, then my answer is just that people want to communicate and they want people to understand them. I think that's at the core of it. Like the core of putting anything down is so that you can communicate to someone else an idea or a feeling, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's at the very, very core of it. I mean, I don't know if that's the answer you wanted. This is something that I've thought about for a long time. And so I just think it's people want to, you know, to be heard. And so that's at the core of it. It's like really simple. I always simplify things as much as I can. So I, for myself, because if I don't simplify things, then I just get lost in thought.
No, it's a brilliant answer, actually, because for me, arts in every form is another form of a language and expression. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you might really phrase something and put it into clear words. Sometimes you put it into sounds. Sometimes you put it into some visuals, but it's always to touch something in humans, in my personal opinion. And a lot of artists would echo this. It's a fundamental motivation of humans to express themselves in all kind of dimensions, including painting and acting and writing. And now we have AI coming into the picture. So what is the role of AI for you?
The role of AI just as a whole?
In creative processes.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
It's a tool. Like it's definitely just a tool. Like in the creative process, I look at AI no different than a paintbrush or a hammer or anything. And in fact, I talk about this analogy often. I wrote it down once. Again, this is a thing where I like made it really simple for myself. So I'll have a lot of things. If you watch more than one podcast with me on it, I'll say this thing again. So AI is a tool like a hammer is a tool. And its role in creativity is the same as a hammer because not everyone can sculpt with a hammer, but an artist can. And that's how I use AI.
Thank you so much for this response, because there is one thing which I'm kind of, you know, try to fight. And this is this notion of AI developing consciousness and generative AI being just a prelude to, you know, artificial general intelligence. I think it's nonsense. It can't be done mathematically. And I love that you are speaking about AI as a tool. You wrote this book, AI for All of Us. Thank you for this book. I read it. You are citing several stories how creatives are using AI. Mm-hmm. Would you maybe explain a couple of those stories? For example, my understanding is that your wife is a fashion creator. How is she using AI in fashion?
I can't tell you everything she does. Obviously, she knows, but I can tell you two very interesting things she does with AI. Three, actually. One, the simplest one is it really helps her plan. You know, it's like she'll have a base, she'll spout it to AI. It'll help her organize and plan, which is great for anybody, not just people in fashion. But number two, she can put out her fabric and her clothes and things like that and take pictures and tell AI, I'm thinking of building something that looks like this. And then she can see like an idea of what it might look like before she even starts, which is super useful, like incredibly useful. Like she's taken pictures of elements that she wants together in a piece and then was able to tell the AI, I'm planning to do this to it. And then it could like, here's a picture of what that might look like. That's so useful. And the third thing she's done with it, which is amazing, is she's solved a crime. Her store was robbed. And then she used AI to help her write the police report. She told her theories to AI, and then AI helped her go down through every suspect. And then she gave what she concluded to the cops, and it helped find the person. Boom.
This is fantastic.
That's awesome.
That's absolutely awesome. It could be a game, you know,
yeah.
solve the crime. It could be really a game. That's wonderful. Does she think, if you know, whether AI can replace a designer?
I don't know if she thinks that or what she thinks. I think that as far as like creatives being afraid of AI taking their jobs, which everyone is talking about, yes, it can take your job for the low-level creative stuff. The unfortunate thing is that we were in a creative gold rush and we didn't know it. So in the gold rush, the people who sold the shovels were the ones who made the most money. Shovels and pails, blah, 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 the supplies. So we were in a gold rush where there's so many people that needed content that if you were a graphic designer or able to edit video or whatever, like the way things are going where people are communicating with more and more content, your value is going up. And then, but these are actually kind of like low level creative jobs. I mean, they can be fine work, but you get what I'm saying. It's just like, if you're just like an in-house graphic designer, you're not thinking of yourself as Picasso necessarily, unless that's what you do on the side, but you still need a day job. I don't know what happened to your career. Anyway, the point is that if you've got now AI, there is absolutely no way that you are going to ask a small business to pay $500 to help develop a logo when they can pay a penny. Okay.
Yes.
And so, and I think that when artists are mad at businesses for doing that, I think that's wrong. Like, look at it from their point of view. Like, if you've got a business and you can get a logo for a penny. For me, one of the things I do is I always have to pitch to people. I always have pitch decks. And creating a pitch deck that looks really, really, really good is a very specific skill. It took a lot of time for me in the past, but I still create those pitch decks, which are pristine now, but instead of 2 weeks, it takes me a day. It's great.
Actually, so what you're referring to, I'm sometimes comparing AI to the market of premium coffee and chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at those producers, so those who are really thriving are either very, very cheap, so really costing pennies for a package of coffee to buy, or they're really upscale premium. So one chocolate would be like $15.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thriving as well, but everything in between is kind of squeezed and mm-hmm. is disappearing. And what you are describing with so-called content creators, so this mass market is shrinking because it will go to generative AI tools. But those highly sophisticated people, really capable, who really spend 10 or maybe even more than 1,000 hours on learning the craft with very original ideas, they will be thriving. They continue to thrive and they will use AI to thrive even more. Does it ring a bell? Is it what you are observing in the creative industries?
I'm finding that with AI, my output has increased dramatically. And I think that not only has my output has increased dramatically, but like the larger ideas that I've had, it's faster to iterate those. And I understand, like, I as a creative myself, when AI first came out, I was not happy and against it. Like, as a cartoonist, I was like, absolutely not. But what I realized beyond my initial anger at being replaced was that I'm a cartoonist. I always need to find images so that I can, you know, I have to find images as models, you know, like I'll find a picture of a house when I'm drawing a house to, and previously I would have to search for that. And now I can just make one and then be like, oh, I can use that as an image reference. Or, and so just like things change. And that's 10 minutes of my time finding the perfect image reference. And that allows me to do like way more of what I really do well. And I get it. Like the value of what you had, like the product that people have has changed. The value of designing a logo has changed dramatically. And so that means that you have to produce things that have value. You can produce those things that have value with AI. You just need to learn about it and figure out what it is. Also, you can produce things that have value without AI. Just because that product has less value doesn't mean that you can't make other things. You don't even have to use AI. Just do something else with your talent.
Absolutely. And could you please talk about Magic Bookifier? So this is one of those case studies in your book. And this is obviously your business. What is it? How can it help creators, writers to form new stories, to tell new stories? What is it all about?
Okay, well, Magic Bookifier, really simple. It's like a writing assistant. As a writer, I did not want AI that wrote for me. I wanted AI that did assistant work for me. So so we have two main builds, professional builds in there. One's called the long form writer, and one's called the writing coach. And each of them replaces a writing assistant in one way or another. The writing coach replaces a ghostwriter. So what the writing coach does is you sit at the writing coach and you say, I want to write a book about this. And then it gives you a list of pre-interview questions based on what you want to write about. And then you respond to those pre-interview questions and it takes that information and comes back with an entire interview for an entire book. So it just prompts you to answer so that then you create all the information that you need for your book. By the time you're done, you have a first draft, and then you take it from there. It's exactly the way that I wrote AI for all of us. And also, I just want to point out, I've actually never published anything that came out of Magic Book like straight. Like I always edit it, but it just helps me structure it and get everything down on the paper so that I can then do the hard work of polishing. For me, what saves time is like it used to take so long to get to a first draft, and it used to take me weeks to get to a first draft, and now I can do it in an afternoon. A first draft, and then it'll take me weeks to finish. But that's actually the part I like. The other assistant is called the long form writer. It works differently than the writing coach. What the long form writer replaces is just like a writing assistant. If you're trying to write a book, say, and you had, say, 40 episodes of your podcast, you could just take all the transcriptions from those podcasts up to 50,000 words, put it in the long form writer, and then you put in an outline of what you want a book to be. And then it will go through, it'll go through the outline. It will search your data, find what pertains to each chapter, rearrange the material like an assistant would if they were having to go through that. And then it will put out a first draft of that as well, based on your work. So it'll still be all your ideas and stuff like that. It just does the work of like, because that the long form writer was the original idea for what the entire Magic Bookifier is. Because when I first started, I had a podcast that had some popular episodes, and I wanted to take those episodes and turn them into an ebook. And then I was like, AI could do that if it could go through, you know, because I would have to do that. And it's not necessarily like extremely artistic to go through old podcast episodes and turn them into an ebook. And I was like, can't I make AI do that? And so I did.
And talk a little bit about the tech behind it. So you have your database of content, and then how did you proceed from there?
Well, what I did was I did not build my own proprietary language model. In fact, I build my system so that they can use any language model. We could switch out AI.
Okay.
That's not the AI, because the AI in itself is a utility like electricity. It's all converging, like all the chatbots, all the image creators, all the video creators are all converging to be like the same type of thing. It's a utility like electricity. Yes, there used to be, you know, different types of electricity, and Edison fought with, who did he fight with? He was a famous, super crazy.
Yes.
He loved pigeons.
Tesla.
Thank you. Okay. All right. So, but right now, that's where AI is, where there's all different kinds of AI, but it's all converging. And I think that you should build products to use just AI in general, not a specific kind of AI. Anyway, so that being said, the way that I build it is I build AI algorithms that do things. So I use the same way that I would build a normal algorithm, but AI is a component within the algorithm. So you have components in your algorithm that can think. And then so I break down an administrative task, for instance, like the administrative task of being a ghostwriter, into steps. And then for each of those steps, I use AI plus algorithms to build what I call like a module, which does that particular step really, really well. Because what AI does not do well is write a whole book for you. What AI does really, really well is take your one sentence and expand it into a paragraph synopsis idea. To take that synopsis and expand that into a longer outline. To take that longer outline and then expand that into chapter outlines. To take those chapter outlines and write one chapter at a time, which then finally becomes a book. But each of those steps needs to be tuned. And the reason that Magic Bookifier, like people like it a lot, is because it's each of those steps is tuned by a professional writer, me. You know, so that's also missing from a lot of AI. So a lot of people think that you can just tell AI what to do and it'll just do it at an exquisite level. Not true. If you tell it to do it a specific way, like if you're a professional in a field and you as a finance professional tell AI to examine data in a way that you know because of your expertise, you're going to get way results than anybody else. Same thing for me as a writer, telling AI specifically how to write.
So you are touching something which is crucial in implementing AI well, and this is the domain expertise. First being, obviously, writing. Someone might be a musician and build an AI to compose or to finish something. Someone might be in medical devices and use his or her expertise to build a new AI. But could you please further explain, did you find a way to organize your data well prior to put AI on top of this data? Because what I am seeing a lot, people and small businesses are struggling because the data is all over the place. They are struggling to break the silos and kind of, you know, combine the data so AI can really touch it and harvest from it. So how did you work with the database prior putting AI in it? Or maybe you're tremendously organized and have always kept everything clean and pristine.
I've always kept everything clean and pristine.
Okay.
I have a friend who is a data scientist and a programmer who I develop with. And I've been creating for years as a coder, but he is like definitely like a much more professional level coder than I am. But I'm also like the creative side. And then so we collaborate. And so I'm always running things by him. So we keep it clean.
Okay. So this is, of course, a huge advantage to have a good base, a good lawn to start harvesting from. How many people are using Magic Bookifier and what do you hear as feedback?
Right now, I think we have like 17,000 users. And then of those 17,000 users, I think like 5,000 of them are active like subscribers, or they bought like lifetime deals or whatever. And then people really like it. Some people use it as not intended. Like they'll just like use it to create as much material as possible and try to publish it. I mean, and I can't stop them from doing that. I don't like, that's not what I want people to use it for, but some people use it as not intended. And then some people are actually like working on their real books. Like one of the biggest things about it is I met with one of my customers who let me know that she had a bunch of friends who had all signed up for this because they were all like neurodivergent entrepreneurs. And the writing coach, what it did was it allowed someone who's neurodivergent to kind of like focus their thoughts and then ask you questions so you keep on task. And it spread amongst their community because of that fact, which actually led me to partnering with a nonprofit to develop an educational version of the writing coach that can help anyone who has problems concentrating get through writing. And then we're going to try to get it in schools.
So this is actually awesome. So in principle, it democratizes writing and creativity even further and helps to learn. You are talking about the use of AI for mental well-being and mental health. Could you talk a little bit about this?
Yes, I have social anxiety, like a lot. So recently I used AI to help me through an issue, but it involves another person, so I don't want to say it out loud. So that's why I'm fumbling. But I will say that AI can be extremely helpful because you have a system that will respond to you in an understanding manner, no matter what you throw at it. And that is useful. However, I do know that I want to stress that AI does not feel. So I'm just saying caution to people. I use a real therapist. Don't use AI as a therapist, but it can help you think through things, which is great.
It's a two-edged sword. And so there are people using it actually for fraudulent reasons. So I've seen a couple of coaching businesses claiming AI to be what it can't be. But at the same time, AI being very helpful, there was a Stanford study of students using AI to work with their anxiety, showing quite good results.
So I have a friend who works as a social media manager. And then he was applying for a job at CNN. So before they would accept him at the job, they hired them to, I guess, check the social media of a potential hire to make sure they haven't done anything weird online. Okay. That company uses AI. The report that the company gave to CNN. So my friend was like, this is crazy. Like this AI report. And he sent it to me. And then I was like, obviously from the report, like there was one point where he was like, I'm shooting the breeze with my friends, and it misinterpreted shoot as a gun shoot and said that it was a threatening thing. Mm-hmm. That was not AI. That was the person who was programming their AI was terrible. And then the person at CNN was also not aware. So you have someone selling AI who's not aware how AI works. Then you have someone buying the use of a company selling AI who also is not aware of how it works. So that they both, like, I mean, that's so dangerous. Like at that level, that's CNN. But that's so dangerous.
That's unbelievable. I had a story. I saw something on LinkedIn, and it was from a foundation in Switzerland, and I reside in Switzerland. So I got curious, claiming that they developed a kind of an artificial consciousness to help coaches and consultants to work with humans. Mm-hmm. And I asked them, so what type of AI is it? So I was assuming they would say, well, so we are former HR folks, so we interview so many people, we appraise so many people, so this is our database, and then we worked with this data and developed a type of a chatbot. But actually, instead of like chatting with me, what it was about, they sent me my own appraisal. Mm-hmm. So claiming that I was super intellectual but lacked spirituality and needed to open up to the divine, because this AI was not program, it was given, which for me is a nonsense, because I started in AI in 1989. Mm-hmm. Those architectures simply can't give you the full general stack, like what we possess as biological beings. And I understood then, because I started checking their financials. They have never published their financial results, but they prey on donations. So they claim they have this artificial consciousness, which will enable coaches. And sometimes human resource departments of companies are lazy. They don't want to dig deep into something. They see a fashionable, AI, and they buy into it. And then obviously people don't receive what they have to receive if they are to open up in front of a coach. And I consider this tremendously dangerous. And this is for me what I put like into this fraudulent type of an application. At the same time, they are fantastic domains where AI can truly help in curating mental health conditions. For example, being afraid of the height, or simply training a person to be fluent on conversations, overcoming some language deficits, training people to speak in front of audiences. So those all are very useful applications. And to the point, I wouldn't expect this from CNN of all the places.
It's but crazy, but yeah. I'm sure the reason that it happens is because there are so many people who speak about AI as if they have knowledge of it. And to a person that has no knowledge of AI, they seem like they have all the knowledge, because this person was probably using AI to help them speak better about AI. And then, so I'm sure that they also used AI to answer all of CNN's questions and then got the job, because CNN has, whoever was hiring just has no idea. And like, because I think about that all the time. I'm like, anybody who's ever trying to sell me anything with AI and they respond to me, I'm just like, okay, first of all, I know they went over this with AI.
Which brings me actually to one question. You know, when I talk to HR professionals, so they're like, if we receive applications, first, the screening will be with AI. So people start writing applications so it could be read by AI and understood by AI to pass the first threshold. So in creative industry, is it the same situation? Because how do you actually come to the raw personality if you are not like let's say, established and everyone knows who you are? Do you need like... an AI dress on top of your personality to pass through the first screenings?
You mean of like employment?
If you are, let's say, applying for a new gig in a show, or you would like to be a writer somewhere or whatsoever. So do you need to kind of scan the material you're sending to the studio, to the company with the help of AI? What is your experience?
I don't actually know. So I use AI in all of my processes. So my answer would be just yes for me in general, but I don't know what's best for everyone else. The way that I get work usually is not applying to things.
Of course.
But I have applied for a grant and I've used AI to help me with that. So I don't have a complete answer, but I think you get the gist.
Yeah, well, I guess we all need a couple of AI dresses to put on if we apply for things for the first time. I wonder, so...
But I will say this. I am not going to adopt the term AI dress. I will never do that.
AI skin? I do not know.
That's creepy. Maybe AI dress is better. Maybe AI dress is the one.
But let's say, would you send your AI avatar on a tour?
On a tour? No.
You wouldn't?
Well, here's the thing. I think that it matters how people feel. I think that because it matters how people feel, then that should be considered when you're making any sort of presentation or product or offer. And so what you're asking people is hey, I want you to spend your attention on this artificial thing. And that offends a lot of people. So people should think before they use AI. How you use it. Definitely.
So maybe this is the reason why Second Life actually stopped. It was, of course, the age pre-AI, but somehow this completely artificial environments to spend time in, they did not give people what they needed. And this is always about connection and relationship at the end. But I would love to discuss what you do a lot, and this is comedy and humor. AI and linguistic AI isn't great in terms of humor, and there are tons of patterns how to understand the context. What are your thoughts about AI and understanding of humor?
I think it doesn't understand humor because it's not alive, but you can program it to actually write funny things. I've totally done it.
Okay, could you give a couple of examples?
I have a newsletter, a daily newsletter, where AI writes some of it. I always punch it up. But I have a whole system set up and telling it, like, this is what I think is funny. This is how to handle this type of subject, X, Y, you know, these type of subjects. Because it's a specific style for this newsletter. But then once I really honed what the style is, almost like training an LLM to do a specific thing. But it's based on my style, what I think is funny. And the thing is, communicating with AI to be funny is kind of like an art. Because I don't think people talk about how emotional prompting can be. Rather than just, like, if you are a writer and you understand AI, you're very, very, very powerful right now. Because AI, because of how it is made, responds really well to sharp emotional text. So if you tell AI how to do something just the right way, it will respond great because it's intrinsic into how it is. Like it is based on predicting how people would respond. And if you hit somebody up with a very sharp piece of information that really stings, they respond. So will AI.
Which would be in translation, which would mean shifting vectors in the semantical space of an LLM.
Yes. Do not. I Here's the funny thing. I have so much imposter syndrome about working with AI, and I work with it a lot and I do a lot, but I come from an artistic point of view, like where I started. I love to build crazy cool things, but I never like finished college. And I recently got a grant from the National Science Foundation for some of my work. Then they put me in an incubator for that, like to learn about how the whole system works. And everyone else was like literal rocket scientists. I was like, what am I doing here?
It's really funny. It's absolutely funny. By the way, in terms of funny, I'm just like thinking, and maybe this is a completely outlandish idea, but I might actually help to create the dictionary of humor, because what is funny to Americans and what is funny to British people or to South Africans is probably totally different, even if they use the same language. Maybe it could be such a dictionary of context and humor and jokes, translating one into another. I do not know. I would love to ask you the last question. If you are to advise a person who is using the AI for the very first time, what would be this advice?
I think it's real two things. One, use a chatbot, any chatbot. Two, I forget exactly what the famous phrase is, but then just tell AI, hey, I want to do A. What information can I give you to help me do that? And then it will give you some questions, and then you'll answer those questions, and it'll give you a great response.
Thank you so much.
That's how you start.
And that was another AI snack with Romy and Tropy, but there will be another episode featuring Victor Vernado. I did not want to go beyond 40 minutes per episode, as my loyal listeners told me this is the best length to listen to. And I really wanted to understand Victor's story and learn more about how he builds a business around AI and creativity. Victor has a very successful newsletter, and I will leave information about his websites and tools and his book in this podcast notes. If this was your first episode of the AI Snacks, please rate this show on your favorite podcast platform. I'm incredibly grateful to everyone who approached me to discuss their favorite topics, suggested guests for my show, and provided feedback about my content. And in 2025, this podcast's audience grew to 6,000 people. Thank you. Together, we demystify AI, explaining what is real and what is overhyped. Enjoy the holiday season, and I will see you next week.